Are you out of
battery? No, I've got plenty of space. It's recording now, but I'm not sure it's going to stay recording. So we'll see. Good thing we got an editor.
I can't edit and make you appear.
No, you can edit, though, many files together if it stops recording.
I mean, only if you
You've been using DaVinci for like 7 minutes. There's got to be an app for that, right? There's some AI app
you can use. I wonder if AI could do that.
Can AI just pull this in?
Yeah, yeah, that's a better segue.
I'm excited about this one. So the root of this is that you always want to cover whatever the hottest thing in the world is right now, right?
I mean, that's just the natural talking points, right? That's just what people want to talk about.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Water cooler talk.
You know, Twitter's gone now, so that was like the heartbeat of the conversation in the world. And now it's, you know, what's the name of our podcast? Skinny Fries. It's Skinny Fries. I almost called it 21 Fries. It's a new pod we're doing. That's our side pod, 21 Fries.
We brought the theme song back.
I've heard that. Yeah. Not today, but it's there.
How many bourbons have you had tonight?
Zero. I'm not drinking.
Interesting.
Okay.
You should have lied.
I would have made it feel better. Okay. Welcome to Skinny Fries. I'm your host. Okay. So the pod we want to do is about AI. We want to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, so in a way, yes. Yeah. So we had an idea, first of all, right?
Yeah.
We thought we were going to talk about AI.
Yeah.
We together said, hey, let's break it up into three episodes.
Yeah.
Right? Let's do one on like literature and art.
Yeah.
One on music and movies,
mm-hmm.
and one on the future end of the world.
Right.
Right. And so we had this approach. We're going to split it up, do all this. And then you got this bright idea to use ChatGPT. And what did you do?
Well, I told it that that's what we're doing. And I had asked it to make an outline for a podcast split into three episodes on these topics, summarize it for me. And we are going to use that outline to create this podcast. Now, I will say it was an original idea. However, I have heard since that it is not as original as I think. And Casey and Istat just did a video about this, and other people have done some similar things. But obviously, Kevin Rose watches those videos. So
Kevin Rose had to fall in love with him and then threaten to kill him. So I mean, there's that.
No worries. No, so
I don't think we're going to have that same issue.
We are going to talk about AI through our point of view, right? Obviously, neither of us have a degree in machine learning, and we're going to stay out of some areas of it based on our work. But we're going to touch on some of the things that we think matter. And so this first episode, we're going to talk about AI in art and in written word.
Yep.
And, you know, I'll just go to the beginning of this, and we're going to go a little back and forth here. It says, you know, introduce the topic and state its significance. So, Amir, why is AI important right now in art and the written word?
That's a good question, John. I mean, I think, you know, I wanted to kind of talk about this segment because of just some of the things that I've been seeing lately, you know, in the news and the blogs I follow, specifically in regards to like, you know, art. A lot of it is art, right? So, you know, I mean, like, this is not a new thing, but it's been a hot thing as of recent. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk about that. And specifically what I kind of wanted to dive into was, like, you know, how does it work? At what point does it become, you know, plagiarism? Not maybe plagiarism is the right word. It might be for written word, right?
Yeah.
But at what point is it no longer art? How much impact does the artist have in it? What does it mean? I think you and I are going to have some conflicting views on this and maybe some agreements on this. But overall, it is such a hot topic that I think the significance is that this is the way we're moving forward. And I think this being the first kind of topic that we talk about on this episode, it's going to resonate a lot into next week's episode when we talk about music and photography and videography, because you'll see a constant theme going through, right? Which is the way that art as a whole is created is going to change moving forward. And there's going to maybe need to be some written or unwritten kind of rules or agreements within the communities as to what is considered art, what is no longer considered art, or maybe there's a new category where it's human art and generated art. Anyway, so without diving into it too much, I think that is the overall topic and the significance of it is that this will be the foundation of everything else that we talk about, and I think everything else that AI impacts in the creative world.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I think I had a couple friends that said, oh my God, you're talking about AI. Thank God. Because I don't understand.
Because we are the source.
Really worried about the responsibility you're putting on us. That is concerning that you get most of your information from Wikipedia, but that's fine. This is not from Wikipedia.
It is not. It's from ChatGPT.
Just way worse. We're going to talk about why it gets it wrong all the time. So I first I want to establish the difference, because you're going to hear two terms used a lot today, which is machine learning versus AI, right? Mm-hmm. And they are related terms, but they do not mean the same thing.
Sure.
And they're used to represent two different concepts. So when I'm talking about machine learning, I'm really talking about, you know, all the technologies, the algorithms that enable systems to identify patterns, you know, make decisions, improve themselves through the experience. Artificial intelligence, in that vein, it uses machine learning, but I'm more referencing things that emulate human thought or perform real-world tasks, right? So I believe it's important to acknowledge that they are incredibly related topics, but they should be used differently because they are not the same thing.
Right.
ChatGPT, which is going to be the centering topic of this particular podcast, the reason that is in the umbrella of AI is because it's emulating human thought, right? By the way that it presents information. Where machine learning, you know, for example, when Adobe Photoshop learns how to do context-aware fills, because it follows a similar pattern and says, okay, well, the sky was repeating this bluish, you know, gradient, and I'm going to fill that out because you removed it. That's machine learning, which is a cool technology, but it's not emulating a human task. That's a different thing. And so I'm really sensitive to people throwing the term AI around every second right now, and everything you use has AI built in. It does not. That is not what it's doing. It's using sometimes not even machine learning. It's using some basic, you know, coded plan, but at times it's using machine learning. So, you know, when I thought about this topic, like, I went to ChatGPT because that's what people tend to associate right now with the written word version. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you were kind of fascinated with some of the uses. What are some of the examples where you've seen ChatGPT used successfully or used in a value add to someone's life? What are some ways people could use that?
There's a lot of different applications, right? So if we're going to narrow it down and focus on written word mostly, let's start there.
Yeah.
I think there's some very good value added when it comes down to gathering information, generating ideas and topics, checking for not accuracy, because ChatGPT has been known to be very inaccurate.
And we'll get to that.
And we will. But checking for accuracy in certain ways, maybe not information, but say grammar, right? Or, you know, things of that nature. So there's definitely some applications to it, right? I could see a student using it to get some ideas for a topic that they need to write an essay on or a thesis on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could see a writer using it to kind of start the foundation for a report or a publication they need to do. There's some things you could do it to if you're just, you know, stuck. Let's say you're somebody who uses voice assistant software, right, on your mobile device. And maybe you want something that's a little more robust, that can answer more, or that has the ability to be asked follow-up questions.
Yeah.
Right? There's some applications there for it. But I also think that line is very, it's a very thin line.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it's a rabbit hole, right? So let me go back and put myself in the shoes of a high school student who needs to write a paper. Okay, so I need to write a paper on
Revolutionary War.
Yeah, the Revolutionary War, right? Okay, so I don't know a lot about it. I didn't pay attention in class, but I need to write a paper on it. I could very easily ask ChatGPT to write me an essay that is 3,000 to 4,000 words long about the Revolutionary War from the perspective of, you know, the generals in the North or in the U.S., right? And it could write it for me. And I could literally copy paste that and submit it. That is crossing a line, I think, that any teacher would agree you have crossed. You have not created that. You have not written anything.
Okay.
In that application. I could also ask it to give me, you know, the top five, you know, important events that happened during the Revolutionary War that led to the victory for the U.S. Mm-hmm. And take those top five events and write my essay based on that.
Right.
Right. One, I am fact-finding, and I'm using that information to write my essay. The former, I am literally having it write an essay for me. Now, that might be okay in certain applications, but if I'm in high school and I'm asked to write an essay and I have, you know, ChatGPT do it for me, I don't think that that is acceptable, and I don't think any teacher would find that acceptable.
Okay, so I just sent you.
You did. It's very long.
A 500-word essay about the Revolutionary War written from the perspective of the Northern generals. It's spoken from a point of view of Horatio Gates, as well as Nathaniel Greene, and talked about the impact that the Northern generals had on the Continental Army against the British, right?
Right.
So here's where I'm going to disagree with you on this concept.
Okay.
If we go back to our... I'm sorry, I don't mean to make an old joke, but like my... junior year of high school, your, what is that, senior year of college? Is that about right? About 5 years? I'm not even being funny right now. I'm genuinely asking.
It's 3 years.
Are we 3 years apart?
Yeah, you're turning 40. I'm 43. Three years.
Okay, that's four, but okay, that's fine.
40 and 43 is three. I'm pretty sure.
I graduated high school in 2001. Did you graduate in
1998.
98.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah.
So when you're in your third year of college and I'm in my third to fourth year of high school.
The math went backwards again. Maybe you should ask ChatGPT to do math for you.
You won't like it. I'll ask it how many days old you are.
It'll get it
if
wrong.
If you wanted to go write a paper on the Revolutionary War, where would you have gotten all of the information to write that paper?
From a library, most likely.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So you would have gone to a library and you would have checked out a book.
Yep.
Or maybe you would have loaded, what was that, Encarta? Was that what it was called? Microsoft Encarta?
I mean, if you're aging me the way you're aging me, you would have told me I grabbed the Encyclopedia Britannica and looked up the R book.
Not being a jerk. This is honest. Your college, you probably had Encarta, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I think so.
So you load that up, you get the information, you write your essay from the perspective of whoever makes Encarta and wrote the books that you checked out in the library.
Yeah.
It has bias in it. We know that. Looking backwards now, we can see so much of the racial bias and the political bias that's written in things from the story of the victors, right? Now, you would have been assessed on what in that from a teacher's point of view? What are the things that they would have assessed your work in?
Well, I would like to think the teacher would look at historical accuracy.
Okay. Which they would gain from...
From the content in it, right? Just fact-checking, essentially, right?
Using the same books, right?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
But they would also look at my understanding of what actually happened. So my creativity, my use of my own words and context and grammar and creating sentences and paragraphs and writing an essay that has a beginning, a middle, of an end based around a thesis built on an outline. Uh-huh. Like, part of it, I think, is the historical accuracy of the topic, right?
Sure.
But part of it is my ability to actually speak to that, my ability to put my own thoughts, my words around the facts and write an essay.
Right. So in my time, right, so coming into my senior year, we didn't have Google. It was brand new. But we had, you know, the bad versions of search engines back then, Excite and, you know, at some point Yahoo came around and Ask Jeeves was around and a few of those, right?
Sure.
And you would go to research something like the Revolutionary War, and you're in this place as an 18-year-old back then of picking sources that are the most accurate, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out what sources to trust. So maybe you search something and you start with the EncyclopediaBritannica.com, or maybe you trust, you know, the next site because it seems to be something responsible based on the URL. But man, 10 links down, like you're just reading some Yahoo's, you know, blog. I guess those didn't exist back in the day, but their GeoCities account on the Revolutionary War.
Right.
Your job in that was to come up with an understanding of how much of this is accurate or not by your research. The bibliography meaning more to the story than even the written form, right? But the problem is, most teachers probably graded you on how subjectively well you wrote and not how objectively true the information was, because they may be just as misinformed as you if they don't have time to go research all that. And God bless teachers, 40 students, how are you going to go research all that stuff, right? I'm not assuming they're going to every bibliography and looking at it. So gets into plagiarism and all the other problems.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting thing that I'm thinking about with this, which is I don't think AI has any new problems. But let me rephrase that. Sorry, yeah. I need to restate that. I don't think in the sense of writing a thesis for school or an essay for school, AI has any new problems. These are the same problems of the last 50 years,
right,
set in new form.
Correct.
Is the source correct? How do you validate it? How do you transpose it into words that sound like you? How do you cite your research and ensure that the information you're presenting is fair? And how do you creatively display this information?
Yeah, I think I align with you on the belief that it is just an updated version of the same problems. However, right. I will disagree with you on the application of it. So if I was to write a paper on the Revolutionary War and I was to do exactly what you did and I copied that entire thing and I put it in a Word document and I saved it and I submitted it as my paper,
you'd get an F.
Maybe.
No, you get
regardless,
an F.
Regardless of what grade I get, that is not my work.
Well,
it's not my work.
It is your work.
It's not. It's not.
It is.
I did. No, it's not.
You did input something. You're about to say you didn't input anything.
But see, this is.
But you input the question. No.
See, this is where I disagree with you on. Anybody can ask a question. It doesn't mean that they own the It doesn't mean that the results that they get are theirs, right? So
nope.
So
but they are.
But they're this not.
They
but,
are. And because if you ask the same question right now, you will get a different answer.
But that's. But you don't understand what I'm saying. I cannot take credit for that. I have to give, because it's not my work, John. And I'll tell you what.
No one else can create that same work.
But it's not, did I write it?
Yes, by the way.
No.
By the way you posed the question.
How many?
You're arguing the output, and I'm arguing the input is just as valuable as the output in the terms of something like ChatGPT.
So this is where I'm going to disagree with you on, because. And I'm going to reference an article that I read that talks about this.
Yep.
And why I agree with you more than I did a week ago, but I still disagree with you. Okay.
Sure.
So there was an article that I read recently in The Atlantic that I want to source because I found it to be really compelling. And basically, the title of the article was "The Future of Writing is a Lot Like Hip Hop." And I thought it was a really good article because I like hip hop, and I could relate the two.
Sucker Jim with the remix.
But basically, the gist of this article is that this writer, his name is Stephen Marshy. He was tasked by his editor to write a novel that is 95% AI generated.
Sure.
Okay. And he's been writing forever. He talks about in the article how AI is not a new thing. He's been using it in different forms since 2007, but never to this extent. And to get to the end, and it was a 25,000 word article, right? So at the end of it, he brings up a couple really good points. So one is he cannot take full credit for writing this article. He can't put his name on it because he didn't write it.
Mm-hmm.
So he ended up writing this novel. So he ended up writing it under a pseudonym because he didn't write it.
Sure.
He had a couple takeaways. So the first takeaway he had is that he is an author. So he knows how to write. Okay. And this is going to kind of go back to your point a little bit. So follow with me here. The second one is that he also understands writing styles. And the third one that he talks about is that using a tool like ChatGPT to write a novel actually requires more understanding of the topic instead of less understanding of the topic.
Right.
This goes back to your thing. If I just say, hey, write me a 500-word essay on the Revolutionary War from the perspective of a Northern general, first of all, I haven't asked it any questions. That is a command.
Right.
And whatever the result is not my work. I didn't create it. I gave it a command. If I tell my dog to sit, I'm not sitting. My dog is sitting.
And would your dog have sat if you didn't tell him to?
No, but I didn't do it. The dog did it. But I just told it what to do.
So who trains the dog?
So this is where it goes back to it. I think there is, again, it goes back to this line, right? There is a point at which you have to be knowledgeable in what you're having this tool do. And the more input you have, the more it makes it yours.
Right.
Right. So this is where, like, we agree and we disagree. I think there is a level at which when you have enough input, enough influence, enough teaching, enough training in this chat tool to get your result, then it becomes your work. And this is where it ties back to hip hop. What he mentions is when you think about DJs today, right? You think about, like, I don't want to say Kanye because nobody likes him right now, but any producer, right? Timbaland, any of those. None of those guys know how to play instruments. Very few of them do. I take that back. Very few of them know how to play instruments.
Sure.
But they all have an understanding of how music works, of how beats work, about what instruments sound like.
Right.
And so when they get in the studio, they're using their knowledge of music to create music.
Right.
Right? If I'm going to go sit there and write an essay for school on the Revolutionary War, if I approach it and give it my information, my knowledge, right, to train it on how I write, feed it the information that I have learned through studying, I'm going to get two different things back. I'm going to get a more accurate response, and I'm going to get a response that is more mine than it is saying, write me an essay, here's the result. Here you go, teacher.
Okay. I'm going to refute this whole idea based on a different premise.
Okay.
We'll get to hip hop. We're in a whole music section and we're going to break down that awful metaphor. Everything that you create, you've learned contextually from someone else.
Sure.
You are not coming up whole cloth with research ideas. Like, no. You have original thoughts. I'm not pretending to go as a human being.
Right.
But if I said, Amir, go write an article on the Revolutionary War, everything you're going to be producing was a thought of someone else. It was either their point of view, which you have studied, learned, and accepted. It is their wording, which you have stolen, maybe not plagiarized word for word, but it's not like the English language is infinite. So you have taken their ideas, concepts, and passages. It's the mix of your family and friends, the educational path you had. And there are patterns that I could identify if I just set all of your writing out for the last 40 years of your life. And I would find some very similar themes about how you say things, what you believe, what your views are, what your politics are, and how you approach perspective, right?
Sure.
In the things you create.
Correct.
My argument is, in 1943, if you had to write an essay on the Revolutionary War, you would research, you would use books that were written by other people, that would form your ideals. You would write something based on that. You didn't create anything. You documented other people's thoughts into your own, you know, recap of the story, right? Yep. And you get credit in a certain way. Fast forward to 2001, you do that same thing by using disparate research places, using this interweb of ideas. If in 2001, there were no tabs, but use the metaphor. If you opened 50 tabs, opened every one of those revolutionary sites, cut five sentences from each, and put them into a document and turned it in, you would have a lot of information from a lot of perspectives and you would get an F. Because the quality of what you contributed.
I would also might be kicked out for plagiarizing because I copy pasted.
Right, but you probably wouldn't because they didn't know how to research that back then.
But now they do, and that's a problem.
The difference on this one is it is basically doing all that same work for you and presenting it in a what feels like a non-plagiarized form. I agree with you in the premise that taking ChatGPT, putting that in, taking that essay and turning it in is not an okay outcome. I do not agree that it's plagiarism or not working. I just think it's bad work.
Well,
like the actual skill that we need to teach kids is how to do that and then how to discern from that what is the truth, how do we make this, you know, take some Aristotle for you, ethos, pathos, and logos. How do we make this something that people want to hear, see, mm-hmm. or feel? Like, how do we communicate the message to someone? And then how do we understand our biases in it by balancing it with other forms of research? I think the problem is people see this created like, well, you didn't do anything. Like, well, if you go to ChatGPT right now, you will not get the same answer as me because you'll ask that question or pose it in a different way. And I do think that we need to give credit to that input mechanism being an important part of how this journey is going to go from an AI perspective. Now, I do think there's a moral concern here about how it was trained on the information and the massive risks that are going to come from the hallucinations that it has and the information being wrong and people just representing that. But again, I don't think that's a new problem. I think that's a 50-year-old problem set in a new way with probably more risk than ever before.
It is. You're right. It is an old problem set in a new way. You said one thing that I think is the connection here.
Yeah.
Is that it's the input that you give it.
Right.
Okay. Again, I don't disagree with 90% of things you said, but I think the important factor here, and this is, it is a very subjective thing, is the amount of input you give it is going to determine how much of it is actually yours.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You mentioned throughout my entire life, every time I've written something, every report I've done, everything I've created, it's been shaped by all the things around me that I've experienced in life. Mm-hmm. But I have created it. The theme song, I didn't ask something to make me a theme song and then use it as my own. I created it. I used the tools that I have learned and applied them to create an output.
Yeah.
Right. So that is very different than saying, make me a song, and then taking that and saying, I made this.
I don't think so.
Well,
let me say why, though.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're going to get into music later. I realize we're probably already in episode two right now.
Write me a book, and I say it's mine. No. I have no input. My input literally was, write me a book. That is not input enough to make it mine. Now, if I say, hey, write me a book based mm-hmm. on this with, you know, this train of thought and this information and my style and my beliefs and my perspective and my opinions, put these together, formulate a result for me, that's different. I have more, and again, like I said, it's very subjective. I have more input. I have more training input on the result it's going to give me.
I think both of them are your creations, but no different than if you open Logic right now
mm-hmm.
and you made a beat
mm-hmm.
and you added, you know, a basic major chord over top of it.
Mm-hmm.
The computer did all that. You didn't do it.
I did. I selected the beat. I added it to a timeline. I cut it. I edited it. I aligned it. I did it.
Sure. You did three steps. So you're saying ChatGPT was one and this was three. No.
I didn't do three steps. You didn't play the note.
You didn't make the sound. You didn't create the beat.
But this is, it's not about creating. It's like saying I didn't create the language.
So what's the line of creation?
The line of creation is assembling it all together.
So it's assembly.
John, you're being very difficult here, right? So it's like me saying, then let me turn it back to you.
Yeah.
Every picture you've ever taken, you haven't done it.
I agree. This is a fascinating thing. Okay.
So then what have you done?
I don't know.
Okay. But see, this is where I disagree with you. I think you're looking at it from the perspective of point A is the creator and everything after that is mimicking the creator.
If I take a picture of Horseshoe Bend like you did this week,
uh-huh.
and I delete the sky, uh-huh. and I put a new one.
Sure. We're going to talk about that next week.
But did I create that?
You took the photo, and that's going to be a line that we're going to talk about next week.
I captured light that already existed.
But then by your simple rules, energy never ceases to exist. So everything that we can do is just already done.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, now we're getting into a really weird philosophical thing that I'm just going to not talk about.
No, I want to talk about it.
We're talking about on the high level overview of what actual life is. Creation, creativity has a balance. Okay. A Van Gogh, Starry Night, is a Van Gogh Starry Night. If I asked ChatGPT to make that for me right now,
yeah,
it's not mine. No. didn't create it. I didn't envision it. I didn't.
But what's the difference between that and you painting something in the spirit of Van Gogh's Starry Night that looks sort of like it from your memory?
But it's me painting it. It's the act of me actually doing it.
Yeah, I did do it. I went to a computer and told it to make it for me.
You didn't.
Things we do on computers count.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
If you hire someone to come build a shed for you in your backyard, did you build that shed?
I hired them.
Okay, but you didn't do it.
I agree.
You right.
I didn't say I did it. Right. I hired him.
Right, exactly. So you didn't build that shed. Somebody else did.
But it's still my shed, right?
You own it, but you didn't create it.
Okay, so if I tell ChatGPT, I will get this right one day, to make me a novel, I own it.
You can own it, but it doesn't mean you created it. No,
what does that matter?
It's not your work. It's not your work. I bought this mouse. I own it. Did I make it? No.
You didn't make anything in your house.
Right. I didn't create any of it. That's my point.
Yeah, but it's still because your fan behind you.
Because you own something doesn't mean you created it.
Okay.
There's a difference there. Okay. And right. So in the perspective of literary work.
Yep.
Right? Specifically, we're talking about an essay for class.
Yep.
If I pay you to write me an essay, I could turn it in as my work.
Yeah.
But I didn't write it. It's not my work.
Agreed.
And that's what I'm saying. So if I sat there with you because I didn't know how to write, let's say I broke both my hands and I couldn't write, but I sat there with you and I said, hey, John, write this essay for me. And I recited to you what I want you to write.
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing at that point is scribing. You're not creating. I am creating your scribing.
Right.
If I say, John, I want to write a 500-word essay on the Revolutionary War, write it for me, and I step back and you write it, I can say it's mine. I can claim ownership, but I didn't create that. You created it.
I understand the semantics of that argument. What I'm saying is, if I go to you and say, hey, Amir, I need a 500-page essay for my class.
Mm-hmm.
And I lay out the parameters to that essay and define for the next 4 hours all of the things that it must contain in order for you to produce the essay that's going to get me an A.
Mm-hmm.
I did something in that equation.
100%.
What you put into ChatGPT is that part of the story.
I agree.
Now, just like you could go to Amir and say, write me any essay, I don't really care, just make sure it's about the Revolutionary War, would probably net you a really poor balance of what you hope to express.
Right.
What you input is going to give you a different output on the grade side 100%. By your work.
100%.
My argument is not saying that anyone should do this. I'm saying that's our responsibility as a society to see this and say, okay, we're in a new paradigm.
Right.
Where throwing big words around that have a certain writing style that, you know, creates an emotion is going to be something everyone can now do.
Right.
That's just like table stakes now. And I think that all we're saying is there's going to be a new responsibility on educators, on media, on, you know, every journalist, on anyone to take in this now easy to present information that was created by, you know, 5 minutes on an input side.
Yeah.
And not just judge the output of it, but think about the content in it. And that should inform whether the person was actually an active participant, a contributor, a knowledgeable party. And I do believe, just like I did back when Google was a thing, there is a teachable skill here for kids of go ahead and write the essay that way. That doesn't bother me. Because the 8 hours you're going to have to take to research that thing, change the verbiage to make sure it matches your style, make it more interesting. That is the work.
I agree. 100% I agree with everything you said. I think where we started and where we ended, we've come full circle, right? Let me go back to point A and point Z, okay?
Right. Right on both of those points, right? Wherever you get there, just do that.
No. Point A.
Okay.
ChatGPT, write me a 500-word essay on the Revolutionary War from the perspective of a Northern general.
Yes.
I get the result. Mm-hmm. I put it on paper.
Yep.
That's literally all I'm doing, and I'm turning it in.
Yep.
Regardless of the grade. That is not my work.
It is now, your work. Well, it's just
finish.
Bad work.
Well, let me finish. It's not my work. It Point is. B, same question. I get the result. Now I sit there and I go through it. I fact check it. I edit it into my language, into my words. I think if I go back to that article from The Atlantic, one of the things that stood out to me, and I think this kind of sums up the way we have to move forward in the future, okay? People are becoming more of a curator than a creator. And that's what's going to happen in this AI world, right? You have to be able to curate instead of necessarily creating, because AI will do the creation as long as you're the curator behind it.
But this is the thing that is interesting and what I think we have to do societally here. And I'm just going to leave this as the last, you know, yeah, piece of the equation from the outline about the future in this world. I find myself be more accepting that this just is the world we're in now.
Sure.
And what's interesting is all those things that you talked about, the computers that run through and check for plagiarism, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this is back to the initial description. Those are mostly based on machine learning, where
right,
they learn the patterns, they look for things that are similar, they tie it together. Well, mm-hmm, if this is a true AI model, you won't find plagiarism in it because it's generative AI. So the words that are coming out are not cut, copy, and paste from Google. It is a new form of what we used to consider plagiarism, you know, taking someone else's idea, right?
Yep.
The question becomes no different than if all you did before was post those things in Google and go back and edit. Is that okay to do, and is that valuable? In the industrial economy that started the 1900s, people's hands were what mattered most, right? You hired someone based on their physical ability.
Right.
In the knowledge economy that followed it, people's heads mattered most. In a human economy, which we exist in today, because knowledge becomes prevalent with something like this, right? Like, now what matters most is people's hearts and the way that they respond here, right?
Sure.
The way that people show up with empathy, the way that they care about others and what they show you in who they are.
Yeah.
I think this actually just forces us down a road of saying, it's not that intellect is ever going to be put away, but there, we probably level that playing field and create parity there when someone can just go to ChatGPT or any other thing and get information really fast. The difference will be in people that can discern the difference, can find things that are those, you know, hallucinations that come from this stuff, and can find a way to express it in a human way in which other people consider the message. And I think that just becomes more real and more important than it ever has before.